You know what time it is. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Let me hear you. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No hot takes. No garbage. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No fake takes. No first takes. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
This is the Weekend Warrior Podcast, presented by WTP Sports. I am your host, Pat Lane. Tonight is episode 73. That makes it the John Hanna episode, the Charlie McAvoy episode, and perhaps even the Bryce Brents episode. I want to give a big shout out to everyone listening on 12 on Sports Radio. Thank you for listening there as well. Tonight, we have old friend and former co-host Mike Lang going on the show to talk a little Patriots, talk a little Red Sox. It's a fun little conversation we have there. Also have Chris Casalga joining us for the love-hate, as always, the three-minute drill, and this week in sports history. Now, before I get you into the interview with Mike, I want to remind you that Beard Brand is a premium men's grooming company with products not only for your beard, but also for your hair and body. Do yourself a favor and head over to beardbrand.com and take care of yourself. Without further ado, let's get you into that interview with Mike. All right, so we are welcoming back onto the show former co-host of the show who left me in the dust. Former co-host of the show, great friend of the show, great friend of mine, soon to be family of mine, as a matter of fact. Some big things have happened since he was on the show. So, you know, leaving the show may have been the best thing that's ever happened to him. I don't know, but, you know, who knows?
Mike Lang, I would probably say it's close. It's up there.
It's close. That's what I mean. You could draw like a direct line in the sand, like, you know, you left the show and then things started turning around for you. You know what I mean? So it's been good. But Mike, I'm happy to have you back on. I'm pretty pumped about it. I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm pretty excited about it.
Great to be back.
It's good getting the band back together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like Peyton Manning in those stupid Nationwide commercials. He's like, "Oh, we're getting band back together," and the guy's like, "Whoever, I don't know what country singer it is, but he's like, we were never in a band, Peyton." And he's like, "Oh no, we were totally in a band." It's like, "No, Peyton, we were never in a band." Okay, all right, whatever. So, anyways, I don't know why that made me think of it, but it did.
We're a lot closer than that, I think.
I would agree. Yeah. Much cooler than Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put that on you. So, all right, let's get into some Patriots talk here. Obviously, a 38-7 drubbing of the Miami Dolphins last week, who the biggest fraud team ever. They just every year they do the same thing. Miami's gonna be so good, and they just got embarrassed in Foxborough last weekend. It was ugly from start to finish.
Yep.
So, but again, that's one of those things with the Dolphins where you knew it was coming. I mean, the Patriots played. It's so funny because I woke up on Sunday morning with the Patriots being 1-2 and looking like one of the worst teams in football the last 2 weeks. And I was so supremely confident they were going to win that I was like super happy all day. Like, oh, we're going to watch the Patriots win this week. I'm like super excited. And they just totally decimated them. And it was no doubt in my mind from the beginning of the day when I woke up on Sunday, they were going to absolutely destroy them.
Yeah, that's just the Dolphins. They never come here and play well, even when they're playing well. You know, I think the only time they win is when it's the end of the year and the game doesn't matter for the Patriots. It's really the only time that they come here and win.
Exactly. So, well, I'll tell you what.
The games are rarely competitive, especially in Foxborough. Now, in Miami, it's obviously different. The Patriots have had a history of playing pretty poor in Miami. But yeah, it's just kind of strange that it's like that, you know.
It's interesting, and you mentioned, you know, the Miami not coming up here and playing well. Since 2001, the Dolphins have won once in New England, one time. Wow. In New England, and that time was the infamous for Patriots fans. No, they won that game. It was the infamous Wildcat game.
Yeah,
the Patriots got absolutely destroyed. But that Wildcat game happened in 2008 when Matt Castle was the starting quarterback. Tom Brady has never lost to the Dolphins at home in his career. Yeah. Never lost the Dolphins at home in his career. So that's, you know, you talk about Miami. He has not lost to Buffalo at home. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right, because they lost to Buffalo at home, but Jacoby Brissett was the quarterback, right. I believe his last name. So, but you're right. So it's just, you know, AFC East is a joke anyways, and they don't win in New England. And so, you know, it should have been a sign to everyone that that was the case. Although, I mean, 38-7 was still surprising. I mean, at one point, Sony Michel had like 105 yards rushing, and the entire Miami offense had like 125 yards total the entire game. And it was just like they were awful. So, but defensively, last week, according to Pro Football Focus, last week the Patriots missed one tackle in rush defense the entire game, which is just, you know, you want to talk about, you know, controlling the line of scrimmage and really stopping a team. That's how you do it, is by stopping the run. And they had been awful against the run all year long.
Yeah.
I guess the real question is, do you think it will continue?
Yeah, looking at the schedule, I mean, next week is obviously tomorrow night, it's the Colts, but Kansas City will be a challenge, and then, you know, we'll see from there. But I think after that, after Kansas City, it's kind of, you know, it looks like a, you know, a couple of wins, and yet Green Bay, they should beat Green Bay, I would think.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, they look like a 12-4 team again.
Right. It's true. I mean, it's, I agree with you. And the run defense is interesting because I talked about this last week with Rich Hill when he was on the show, but I think Hightower going back to the middle, as much as I loved Hightower on the outside, and I think he can do so many different things outside, the defense is just better with him in the middle because he's just such a good player. He's so smart.
Yeah.
And he's not the fastest guy, but when he hits that, when he hits the holes, man, it's just like, you know, he gets there and fills the hole. And he doesn't necessarily need a ton of speed for that. He just reads and reacts. And, you know, he's good at anticipating where the ball is going as opposed to just flat out speed from sideline to sideline. And so I think that him going into the middle actually helped their defense a lot. And obviously Bentley was a good player. He's on IR now. And I liked Bentley a lot, but I think Hightower being in the middle actually helped their defense a lot more than when he was on the outside.
Yeah. He's certainly a presence.
Right. I agree. 100% on that one. So, and then offensively, you know, Edelman and Gronk, it's been 31 consecutive games in the postseason and the regular season. They have not played together, Edelman and Gronk. And I think it's like
– right, yeah.
I think the number with Brady, Gronk, and Edelman on the field is like 5 out of the last like 51 games or something stupid like that. It's ridiculous, the number. And so it's like if Edelman can stay healthy and if Gronk plays, assuming Gronk plays – you know, you're talking about Edelman, Gronk, Josh Gordon, and then, you know, White and Dorsett and Hogan. And this offense looks like it could be ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. I mean, you just said what was missing. Edelman is a big presence as well, you know, offensively. And it showed, really, because I think Brady has – maybe his timing has been off, but he's been – so missing a lot of passes, and I think because he doesn't have that safety net in Edelman, that sometimes he's forcing it. He threw a couple of picks that were kind of bad picks for Brady, anyways, against Miami. So it'll be good to have him back. And then you have all the other guys that you just mentioned, like Gordon, Gronk, and Hogan, who's got to start stepping up too.
Right. Well, and I think the interesting thing about Hogan and Dorsett as well. They're complimentary guys. You know, they're not guys that can win a one-on-one matchup. You know, you're trying to have one guy to win a one-on-one matchup, you know, to get a first down. I look at them and I'm like, nah, they're not those guys. Now, maybe you put, you know, a third or fourth corner on one of those guys. Okay, maybe they can be that guy. But are you going to put an elite corner on one of those guys and have them be your number one or number two option? I don't think that works. And so that's why having Edelman back is so big. And even Gordon, like, because you have to double Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon has got to kill man coverage. And, you know, and he only had two catches against Miami, but they were two quick slant routes where he caught the ball and broke a tackle or two and ended up picking up yards after the catch. And you're going to have to respect that. And so that's going to start drawing coverage away from other guys. And that's when you're going to see Hogan and Dorsett really do well, I think, is because – the defense can't pay attention to them as much as they can, as much as they would like to. And that's when you're going to start to see them take over, as opposed to, you know, well, they're the number one guys in the offense. They're just not going to be able to get it done that way.
Yeah. And I think another problem the first few weeks is that you don't have Amendola anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that other option, you know, with Edelman out and, you know, where Gronk has been covered so tightly in the last, you know, in the first three or four games. So losing Amendola is bigger than I think people are really talking about. You know, so I agree
100%. Edelman, Danny was a great player. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think that he's one of those guys that comes up in those big situations and makes big plays when you need it. But at the same time, he's also the type of guy that, you know, can beat a man coverage here and there. And so, you know, that's definitely missed the first 4 weeks, and you can tell that. Now, again, did the Patriots make the wrong decision? I don't think so. I think the Patriots actually end up making the right decision.
The long run, getting rid of him. Typical Patriots decision.
Right. That, and
usually doesn't get another contract.
Right. And the thing is that it's not that he's a bad player. It's not the Patriots said he stinks, we don't want him anymore. They offered him a contract for $3 million a year, but Miami offered him six. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, you're not going to match that because you like the guy, you know, and everyone liked him, and he's a great player, and he made, you know, they don't win either of the Super Bowls they win in 14 or 16 without Amendola. That's just a fact, you know,
yeah.
But you can't pay $6 million for a guy who really steps up three games a year. And they're the most important three games of the season. But even still, it's three games a year. You know, you'd like to think you can figure it out with other guys.
So let's go back a few years real quick.
Yes.
Better career with the Patriots, Welker or Amendola?
Oh, my God, dude. That's a great question, because the thing is that Welker statistically was far and away, hands down, better. It's not even close.
Yeah.
But if you look at Amendola and you look at Welker, I mean, you can define Welker's Patriots career by one play. 2011, yeah. He drops the pass that would have won them the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And for Amendola, it's just the opposite. All of his plays are big plays that won them games and won them big games. He caught a touchdown pass in both those Super Bowls. He caught the 2-point conversion that tied the game against Atlanta. He yep. also had, you know, after the Edelman catch, and the Edelman catch was a great catch. Well, obviously, it's like one of the best plays ever. But
yeah,
the catch that Amendola had the next play is a ridiculously underrated catch. That catch was insane. And he made it look simple, but it was a really challenging catch. And he did that over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I think if you made me choose, you kind of have to go with Amendola, because as good as Welker was in the regular season, you really didn't get it from him in the playoffs and in those big moments, whereas Amendola was all about those big moments. And like I said, you don't win the Super Bowl in 14 or 16 without Amendola.
Right.
You don't. And you know, Randy Moss doesn't have 22 touchdown catches, and Brady doesn't have 50 touchdown passes in 07 without Wes Welker. That's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, you look at it and say, well, yeah, but they were in the Super Bowl twice with Welker and they couldn't get it done either time. And, you know, again, Welker had that big drop, and it's like, maybe then Amendola had the better Patriots career, as crazy as that sounds. But it's kind of like, what are you going to do? He was just that good.
Yeah. Certainly more clutch.
Oh, 100%. It's not even close, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I think that they were onto something there. I think they cut bait with Welker at the right time. You know, he still had a year or two left, but, you know, it was getting dicey towards the end there. And, you know, Amendola was the right pickup. He just couldn't stay healthy. And I think the Patriots right. looked at it and said, well, forget it. If he's not going to stay healthy, who cares? We won't play him the whole year, and we'll just play him when we need him. And that's what they did, and it was effective. So, you know, so I think that overall, over the course of time, he'll be one of those guys that I'd be surprised if he didn't end up in the Patriots Hall of Fame at some point, just because of what he did for the team.
Yeah, I would think so. I think Welker would get in too, because I think he owns records with the Patriots. Mm-hmm. I think he has like most catches, or he's definitely up there, I know. But
yeah,
I think
he's, yeah.
He might have had most catches.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, 100%. And, yeah. You know, But it's funny how you look at the revolving door that Brady has, and the craziest Brady stat to me is that, you know, Gronk's got the most touchdown catches when Brady is not close. So he's got like 70 or something ridiculous like that. But second on the list, you know who second on that list is?
Take a guess. You know, Deion Branch?
No.
Okay. Who is it?
Randy Mike Moss.
Randy Moss.
Mike Vrabel, he says. Randy Moss has 37 touchdown catches from Brady. When you look at the amount of touchdowns that Brady's thrown, and none of his receivers have 100 catches, 100 touchdown catches, which 100 is a ton. But, like, second on the list is 37 touchdown catches. And so, like, that's when you start to look at it and you're like, whoa. Like, so you're talking about, you know, it's literally a revolving door for the Patriots. And Brady just makes it work over and over and over again. And, I mean, you know, Moss kind of isn't fair. I mean, that's over, like, 2 years because he had 22 in 07. So, like, you know, he was only here for a short period of time, but he had so many in that short period of time. But, you know, but for him to be second on the list over guys like Deion Branch and Wes Welker and Julian Edelman and, Amendola and guys like that, that they're just not big play guys. I mean, they made great plays and they did great things, but, like, it's not like they're catching 10 touchdowns a year. You know, that's just not happening. Right. So it's just – it's interesting when you look at Brady's career and how long he's played. And the fact that the second most touchdowns ever caught by a receiver from him is 37. That's pretty crazy.
That's like 2.5 seasons together.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because Moss is just that. I mean, Moss is just not fair. Like, Moss and Brady together is just ridiculous. And so that's just, you know, that's not fair with Moss. But, you know, but even still, it's one of those things. So,
yeah.
All right. Anyways, I think you're right, by the way, with the Patriots, 12-4, 13-3. I don't know if they can get to 13-3, but they might be able to. But, 12-4, I mean, geez, you know, 8-8 wins the division. So, I mean, like, you know, it's they're going to win the division. So it's just a question of whether they'll get a first-round bye. I think they will. 12-4, 13-3 might do it. You know, the Chiefs game, not this weekend, but next weekend is going to be huge for seeding in the regular season, you know, seeding in the playoffs. I think, you know, if you can get that game at home, I don't care how good the Chiefs are. I don't believe it until I see it. I don't believe the Chiefs can come into New England in January and win the AFC Championship game. I just don't believe it. Maybe they can, but until they prove to me that they can, I don't believe it. So that game's going to be huge for end of the season when you start looking at it saying, okay, now we have the tiebreaker over them. All we got to do is get to the same record as they are, you know? So,
yeah.
So we'll see. So, anyways, let's get away from the Patriots. I do want to talk a little bit of Red Sox with you because I know you're a big baseball guy. And interestingly enough, we kind of have a common enemy on the team, and I just wanted to talk about him for a second. I know the playoffs start this weekend, right? And so that's the guy I want to talk to, David Price. I mean, what can I say? I hate the guy.
It's a huge series for him. Huge
it
year
is.
For him. Especially with his opt out after the season. And I don't know. I want them to win in the division series in 4 games. Have them lose that game 2 against the Yankees. It looks like it's going to be the Yankees now. Because as of recording, they're up 6-2.
Yeah.
In the 8th inning against Oakland. But yeah, it's huge for Price, and it's also big for Sale, because Sale has a lot to prove, I think, when it comes to the playoffs. I mean, you can pitch great in the regular season, but if you can't do it in October, then what good are you?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, and I think too, you know, with the Yankees, Severino now isn't their game 1 starter.
Right.
I think they'll probably end up game 2. Which means if he ends up game 2, that he could pitch in game 5. And so, you know, you have the potential of Severino still pitching 2 games against you, but the Red Sox control their own fate with that. You know, if you win game 1, when you have Sale pitching against their number 2 pitcher, you should win that game because Sale should be that dominant that you win.
Right.
And then game 2, you would hope that Price, who's been dominant, can continue to be dominant like he has been in the regular season. Again, I don't believe it. I wrote an article, geez, I don't know, a few months ago, I guess now, about how I thought Price should go to the bullpen because yeah, he's pitching great, but all it takes is one game with him. He's a mental case, and it's his whole career that's been the question. He's got 61 innings pitched as a starter in the regular in the postseason. 61 innings pitched as a starter, and he's given up 41 earned runs in 61 innings pitched. I mean, that
2-8, his ERA is over 5.
And
those are Daniel Bard numbers.
Right. And it's even worse because you're including his relief appearances, which he's been good in his relief appearances, and both of his wins came in relief appearances. And so you start looking at it and saying, you know, if you just break out the starting numbers, it's really bad. It's really bad. And that's one of those things where you look at it and say, man, like, you know, what are we getting when he starts a game? And I'll tell you what, game two, he pitches game two and he gets shelled. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know how you can trust him to go back out there and pitch again. I just don't know how you can, you know, because I think mentally he won't be in it anymore.
Right. Yeah. Unless he's coming out of the bullpen, and then that's where it, you know, I can see him pitching well out of there because he was so good in the playoffs last year.
Well, and that was kind of my
series, and he you know, was the best player in the team pretty much.
Right. And that was almost my theory, was that if you pitch him out of the bullpen, it becomes like Andrew Miller was for the Indians, right? Remember that year when Miller was like just an absolute shutdown, two or three innings a night. And like, if you could have that, that's unbelievable. The problem is the Red Sox don't have any starting pitching to back that up. It's not like they can take Price out of the starting rotation and be like, okay, we have three solid starters or three above average starters. They have like one really good starter and one kind of, okay, every now and again, he's pretty good in Porcello. And then, you know, same thing with
he's
E-Rod.
So it's well like Porcello's pitched well against the Yankees.
He has.
He's a hitter.
Right.
So, I mean, that helps. But
right. Especially with him pitching in Yankee Stadium. I think that will be interesting. Game three in Yankee Stadium will probably be Porcello. And that's, I mean, if you can get a great game out of Porcello there, like, I mean, that might, who knows? That could be a sweep. But, you know, again, I think that's there's a lot of question marks for the Red Sox going into the playoffs, as opposed to maybe the other teams where it's like they're pretty solid, you know, kind of at a lot of positions. I think the Red Sox are the weakest pitching team left. They have a great
lineup.
Yeah,
I was just going to say that, yeah. Out of the four teams that'll be in the division series, yeah, they have the weakest pitching.
Right.
Which is strange because they won the most games. So, I mean, clearly their offense did their job, but and Sale missed some time too. But, yeah, I mean, after Sale, Price, Porcello, who else do you have here?
E-Rod, I guess, right? Would be number four?
Yeah. So you're in trouble there. So you got to win. You got to go up 2-0. It's huge that they win the first two at Fenway.
Right. 100%. I agree with you 100%. Because then even if you lose both in Yankee Stadium, then at least you have Sale going game five in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to deal with Severino again, but like at least you have Sale in game five in Boston.
Yeah.
So, but
Severino had some issues in the playoffs. I mean, I think he went 4 innings tonight. And they took him out because his pitch count was up to 80. But he was throwing a no-hitter, but he was walking a bunch of guys. I don't know his numbers, but he had the bases loaded in the fourth inning and got out of the jam. But you know, he's had his problems in the playoffs, too. And the Yankees, it's not like the Yankees have a great rotation, I don't think.
No. You know? No. And they have a good closer, but beyond that, they don't have much of a bullpen either. So, you know, it's going to be – it'll be interesting, and I hate the fact that it's in the ALDS, but
me too.
It is what it is.
I hate it, and I don't know what your thoughts are on the wild card game, but I think best of three is the way to go.
See, it's tough because I like the single game because it's just there's so much more drama with the single game. Mm-hmm. But in baseball, I mean, it's tough, and it's one of those things. And you know, a little peek behind the curtain here, I recorded my love hate with Chris before this, and we did talk about, you know, just things evening out over the course of a full season.
Right.
And like then you get to the playoffs and it's like, well, you only have 7 games. Well, it's like, well, that doesn't really even anything out. You know, and baseball is so long term that almost to play one game is weird. Like, it goes against everything that baseball is about. Yeah. You know, but I think that's good. I mean, I think there are some things, and you're a baseball purist for sure.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, but for me, I'm like, okay, like, one game is, it's fun. Like, that's fun to me because it's, we're adding another team in there, and it's one game, do or die. And it, and what it does is put so much more emphasis on winning your division than just making the playoffs. Well, I like
part of it, yeah. Because yeah. You know, before, when it was just a wild card, you know, a team could, you know, win their division, and the wild card team, they would have the same mindset as a team that won a division.
Right.
Whereas I like that a wild card team is at a disadvantage going into the division series. But I do like the best of three, because I do like the a best of three, because, you know, I think a one game playoff should feel a lot more special where it's two teams that are tied.
Right. You know,
so that's just,
well, I understand that. I like that. That's a good point. I wouldn't be down with a three. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to a three game playoff. So, but you know, we'll call what's the Manfred, right? That's Rob Manfred.
Manfred. Yeah, yeah.
I was gonna say Bud Selig, but he's dead.
He's alive.
he's not commissioner anymore. He might as well be dead. He's in the Hall of Fame. They've forgiven him for all his sins. So as far as I'm concerned, he's dead. Might as well be. So don't actually die, Bud Selig, because then I'd feel bad. But you know what I mean. All right, so Mike, we're going to wrap up the interview here. But before I let you go, we have to talk about your most memorable Weekend Warrior moment. I've been doing this with all my guests. You obviously weren't a part of this. I started this after you left because, you know, I had to, like, figure out something to talk with a different guest that I had on every week. And so we're going to go with your most memorable Weekend Warrior moment. You can't, by the way, pick the moment that you decided to quit the podcast and continue living your life. And, you know, your life went, you know, kind of straight up after that. So you can't pick that moment. So you have to pick a different one.
My favorite moment didn't really happen on the show, but it was on a podcast. And it was.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
The WTC show with Johnny Baseball. And he asked us if it would be a good idea. He didn't say it like that, but would it be a good idea if the Celtics got Porzingis from the Knicks?
Yeah. He was like, for those of you that didn't listen to that WTP Sports episode, it was fantastic. And the question was, I believe it went something along the lines of, am I stupid, or should the Celtics trade for Porzingis? And I was like, that's an accurate take. He's like a top 10 player in the NBA.
But then the follow up question was, next question: could Johnny Baseball try out for the Celtics?
Oh, it was amazing! It was amazing.
So yeah, that was good.
It was great. That's a good moment. That's a good moment. So how about aside from the podcast, in your playing days, let's call them. Right. So your Weekend Warrior playing days, your favorite or your most memorable moment then?
On the show itself?
No. From you playing sports. Right. So for those of you that are new sports listeners here, maybe obviously Mike hasn't been listening to the show, so he doesn't know what the hell's going on. Weekend Warrior is someone who plays sports, but just for the fun of it. So not, you know, it's not a school sport. Right, it's not like you're playing football for the high school or for college or whatever, but it's just like either pick up with your friends or whatever. We've had Nora Princiotti, I think, mentioned like her like spin class was her most memorable Weekend Warrior moment. We've had golf on the show, we've had wiffle ball on the show, we've had, you know, all sorts of things on the show. And so I'm asking you now, Mike, your favorite or most memorable Weekend Warrior moment.
Okay. I've only won one trophy in my life, so that was probably it. That was second place in sixth grade Holbrook basketball.
So, okay.
As far as, like, I mean, I was, like, probably the – I would probably say I was the Ray Allen of the big three on that team.
Well, then.
Yeah.
I mean, those second graders, dude, you were just shooting the lights out.
I was the go-to guy because, you know, no one expected me to hit any shots, and so they left me open, and then and boom. And then I got cocky, like, after that, and I would just do, like, the same move over and over again, and the other team figured it out. So, but I had the trophy. It was second place, and that was the only trophy I ever won. Probably my favorite. That was probably my favorite and most memorable achievement as a weekend warrior.
Okay. I like it. Winning a second place trophy in second grade.
Yeah, because first is the worst and second is the best.
That's a good point. That's a good point. You peaked early, my friend.
Yeah.
But that's okay. He's talking about peaking early. That's like 8 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. All downhill from there.
Yeah, well, that's the way it goes, you know? So it's all right. Then you get old, and now I play basketball, and the next morning I'm like, can't walk, and I'm all sore everywhere, and it's brutal. So,
yeah.
But that's the way it goes.
On the steroids.
So, well, I don't know about that. I think I'll stay off the roids for now. For now. And then, you know, you never know. If I got to do them later to keep playing, I'll do it. You know, so that's what Stallone does. So, good enough for Sylvester Stallone, it's good enough for me.
Damn right.
So, speaking of steroids, we got to call Jose Canseco again. So we got to have you back on the show at some point to put another call into Jose Canseco. We'll do that another time. We're not going to do it tonight because it's a little late tonight. I lie to you.
In the game, so
he might be watching the game. That's a good
dude.
It's his game. That'd be wild if we called him and he's like, "What?"
Yeah,
yeah. Let's not. We're not going to do that though. We're not going to do that, ladies and gentlemen. We're not going to get your hopes up on that one. Next time, though, you're on the show, we're calling Jose for sure.
Okay. It's a deal.
All right. All right, my friend. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
stepping
thanks,
in. Absolutely, my friend. And like I said, we'll have to do it again soon.
All right. Sounds great.
Now, I got to say, I kind of misspoke there. Not really an interview, more of a conversation with Mike. Really appreciate him coming on again. He's just a great guy. And I love talking sports with him, and he's super knowledgeable, and it's a lot of fun usually when he's on. And so, you know, had a little fun ribbing him a little bit that, you know, he left the show and everything else like that. But it's, you know, it's all in good fun. He's a great guy, and he's married my sister, so I better like him. So, again, thanks to Mike for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. And let's get you right into the love-hate segment with Chris. All right, so we have another edition of love-hate here. Once again, just as a reminder, Matthew Berry cut his love-hate short. And so I've decided to do it here, and my guest, as always, for this, or I guess my co-host, perhaps, for this segment, as always, is Chris Kaselka. Chris, thanks for joining me again.
Hey, thanks for having me. Graduated co-host. Loving it.
No doubt. I mean, that's, you know, seems like that might be the case. Seems like that might be the case. So let's get into it. Hopefully this week we'll stay on football, because this is a football segment after all. So I'm going to get us started. And I'm going to go with my love here, and I'm going to go with Josh Rosen as my love. He is ranked incredibly low, like 25th low, which basically means he shouldn't be on a roster low. I think he's actually a low-end starter this week. He's playing the 49ers, whose defense stinks out loud. He's going to have a chance. And David Johnson finally got it going last week for the first time all year. He actually eclipsed 100 total yards. In 2015, he did that in like every single game, except I think for one. And, you know, in this year, he finally did it. He scored a touchdown. And so I think that things are kind of looking up for Rosen. Fitzgerald is healthier than he was last week. So I think against a bad defense that Rosen's probably a low-end starter. He, you know, he's not going to be up there with like a top five guy, but you know, if you're desperate for quarterback somewhere and you got a guy on a bye and you don't have a backup and there's no one on the waiver wire, Rosen might be a guy to pick up this week.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there, Pat, especially since I think those Cardinals are going to be playing from behind quite a bit too. So plenty of opportunities for him to throw the ball. Speaking of Rosen, there's something I love as well. And that's been the evolution of the game of baseball this year. A lot of interesting things going on in the game, from Shohei Ohtani playing both ways to the Tampa Bay Rays starting their relievers, as well as using many of their pitchers in the infield and then switching them back in to pitch. there's been a lot of evolution to the game. I think it's really, actually, this is the most progress made in the game of baseball in years this year. But that also brings me to my hate. And as we're speaking right now, the Oakland A's are playing the New York Yankees in the one game playoff, which, again, I love one game playoff. But I absolutely hate the fact that the Oakland today went out and they started Liam Hendricks, a man who was DFA'd in the middle of the year and is net DFA'd in the middle of the year and is now starting for the Oakland A's. Usually comes in the mid innings. I just don't understand why they did this. Nothing against Liam Hendricks. He had a couple of great years with the Toronto Blue Jays, just not having his best year today. And they're playing in a one game winner take all and they start him. They've had plenty of time to set their rotation. Plenty of time to set the rotation. They've had the other wild card slot locked up for weeks. And actually, the reason I hate it the most is going to go back to the reason I will go back to my love is if Oakland ends up losing this game because they started Liam Hendricks, it's going to set back the evolution of baseball. Again, we have our old crotchety old people watching the game. And this is just going to prove their stupid points that they think that the game shouldn't change. So I am very disappointed in the Oakland A's today, starting Liam Hendricks. If you're going to do it right. You got to start a lights out closer. I just don't know what's going on with them, Pat.
Who's their best starter?
Trevor Cahill, probably, I'd say.
I don't know. That's stupid. Oh, I'm talking. That's it. No. I'm not talking baseball. All right, I'm going on to my hate. Derrick Henry is my hate. What's he ranked this week? I don't know. I didn't look. I don't care. He sucks, okay? He sucks. He shouldn't be in your starting lineup. As a matter of fact, he shouldn't be on your team. If you have him on your team, trade him. If you already traded him, or if you traded for him, then trade him somewhere else. If you're thinking about accepting a trade for him, don't do it. If you have him on your team and nobody will accept a trade for him, just freaking cut the guy. He's terrible. He stinks. He's not good. Derrick Henry, get him off your team. That's my hate for this week.
Ugh. Derrick Henry. Gross. That's what I said. Mm-hmm. Derrick Henry. Ugh. Yeah. You know what it's not as gross as, though, Pat? It's not as gross as the fact.
I'm just hoping to do baseball.
It's not as gross as the fact that we might be getting the Red Sox and the Yankees in the divisional series instead of the championship series. If today's score holds up, New York's up 2-0 in the top of the fifth. Severino's cruising. A lot of game left. A's have a solid bullpen if they happen to, catch a dinger here. But Yankees and Red Sox is the greatest rivalry in all of sports when done right. And they're also probably two out of the three best teams in baseball right now, and we're going to get them in five games in the divisional series. I love Red Sox Yankees. There's nothing better, but I hate the fact that it's going to be in the divisional series. Yankees and Red Sox, I mean, for God's sakes, they came and play in the World Series. All right, so at least give us the championship, the ALCS. Don't waste it in the divisional series. I wish they could do something about having two divisional rivals play in the first round of the playoffs. I'm not a big fan. Not a big fan. Those rivalries should be set in stone for a championship series. So,
I do agree. Red Sox Yankees, I mean, is just iconic, and there is something about it being ALDS instead of the ALCS. It should be the right to get to the championship game, and it's not. Back in the day, it was the right to get into the championship game because it was a pennant. Now it should be the right to get in the championship game because the ALCS, and so it does kind of suck. And now you got me talking baseball again. Stop with the American baseball.
You know what? You can't be stopped. You can't be stopped, Pat. You can't be stopped.
Okay. Back to my love. Tomorrow night, or I guess tonight, if you're listening on Thursday, my first Patriots game of the season. I'm a season ticket holder. I've been a season ticket holder for since 2000, since I was 16. I've been to pretty much every game since. I wasn't able to go to the first game this past weekend. My wife was out of town, so I had to stay home with the kids, couldn't go to the game there. And so it's my first game. I'm ready to just yell and scream and just be excited to be there. It's going to be fantastic, and I absolutely 100% cannot wait And so I'm just really looking forward to it. And, you know, it's just one of those things, man. You get the grill going, you get the kielbasa, you get the ribs, you get the, you know, the steak tips, you get the chicken, you get the, I mean, we got a whole feast going, and it's just, it's awesome. And I love it. There's nothing like it. And so I am super, super excited for the game tonight, tomorrow night, whatever you want to call it, Thursday night. I don't care when you listen to it. I'm very excited about it. And Patriots are finally back on track. So that helps even more.
You know, when I heard that you hadn't been to a Patriots game yet, I was absolutely shocked. I was absolutely shocked. But thinking about it, I'm not surprised that you missed last week anyway. It was a meaningless game since, you know, the Dolphins had already beaten Tennessee, who had beaten the Jaguars, who had beaten the Patriots. So, I mean, I don't even know why they played it. It's hard to get up for a game like that after you've already technically defeated the Pats. But maybe Dolphins will get up for the rubber game in Miami.
That is a good point. That is a good point. They had technically beaten the Patriots. They still haven't technically beaten the Patriots, but they had. Although you play that game and then it's like, you know, the Patriots lost to the – who did they play the third game? They lost to the Lions, who lost to the Jets, who lost to the Browns. And so, therefore, you know, ipso facto, therefore, the Browns have also beaten the Patriots this year. Tough. It's tough. I mean, tough way to go. You've lost to the Browns and the Dolphins, and somehow they're still 2-2. I don't know how that's possible.
I know. And you know that they're – fun fact. They were a hair away from being actually – worse than the Browns and the Dolphins going into week 5 of the NFL season. They were like so close to that.
Okay, I don't know about so close. Oh, you're saying the Browns. You're saying the
Browns
almost
won. They would have been 2-1-1. The Patriots are 2-2.
Yeah, the Browns should have won. Yeah.
The
Browns should have won two of those games now. But nevertheless.
I know. They should be. Yeah, I know.
Freaking Browns.
All right. So I think my last loves here for this week is I love two of the divisional series in baseball more than the others. I love them all, but, you know, it's like trying to pick between your children, I guess. some days it's easier than others. But Rockies and Brewers, the two hottest teams in all of baseball, you know, I think whoever wins that series is going on to the World Series, Rockies and Brewers. Who would have thought that the Rockies have some of the hottest starting pitchers going into the playoffs? And who would have thought that the Brewers would have rattled off like 9 out of 10 and taken over as the best record in the National League from the Cubs 2 weeks ago? I don't think anybody would have thought to get the two hottest teams. I think that translates in baseball more so in some other sports. The winner of that goes on. And I also love the Cleveland-Houston series. I'm big on Cleveland. They have great start, not a great bullpen. I know you need a great bullpen. Houston, great bullpen and great starting pitching. Cleveland does not necessarily have that same bullpen, but they got four outstanding starters, and you don't really need a lot of bullpen depth if you have those four great starting pitchers. You just need enough of the bullpen, and they do. They got Miller. I know he's been hurt. They got Cody Allen, who's been turning around. They got Brad Hand, and they have the ageless wonder, Oliver Perez. I think if Cleveland sneaks that out against Houston, I think they're going to the World Series. Unfortunately for the Sox, who I am rooting for, but my last day of the week is I hate that the Red Sox are right now at World Series or bust. I think there is a lot of pressure on the Sox, maybe unjustly so, having the best record in baseball. And I think, unfortunately, if they don't win the World Series, then their season is going to be considered a bust, unfairly so. This is a team that's been, you know, they've got a fairly young core. I know they got like Sale and JD Martinez. They're not as young as the rest, but they got a lot of years left with this team. This is their first, you know, their first year with Cora as the manager. And it's going to be a shame that a lot of people are putting the pressure on them to win the World Series this year. Since they had I know they had the best record in baseball and all, but baseball is a funny game like that. The best team over 162 games doesn't always win in the World Series. And it's just a funny sport like that. And I hope that people in New England, if the Sox don't win the World Series, don't totally think of it as a lost season, because it's not.
I mean, anytime you win the most games in the history of your organization, that's unbelievable. But I think that, you know, where the Red Sox lack is where the other two teams are good, which is their pitching. And the Red Sox, I mean, they're not proven in the postseason. David Price is terrible in the postseason. And I've been on that train all season long. He should be in the bullpen. Andrew Miller. Like, I think of Andrew Miller when Cleveland made that first run, when Miller was like, you could get five innings and have the lead, and Miller would come in, and there was just nothing you could do for two or three innings every night. And to me, that's Price out of the bullpen. I don't trust him as a starter in the playoffs. Maybe he can do it this year. I don't believe it, but maybe he can. You know, Sale is unbelievable, but he hasn't been very good. And then he's also, you know, he hasn't been very good the last month. And he also has no postseason, you know, track record of being good. Porcello sucked in the postseason. Like, you know, Eddie Rodriguez hasn't, like, it just, they don't have any legitimate pitching that is proven in the postseason, and their bullpen stinks. And so, like, their lineup is really good. But at a certain point, it's like, if you don't have the pitching, you're not going anywhere. And so, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they lost in the first round. I mean, you know, they should win the first round, but it wouldn't totally surprise me if they didn't. So that's definitely frustrating. But you're right. I think that it's still a good season. I mean, you can still look at JD, and you can look at Mookie Betts, and you can look at those guys that have played really well, and Devers has kind of come along a little bit. And I think JBJ is playing well, and so you have the pieces. Now you need a few more pitchers, a few more arms in the bullpen, maybe another starting pitcher or two, and then all of a sudden you're going to reload and be unbelievable. But all right, I'll finish it off here. My hate, other than the fact that you have gotten me to talk about baseball like four times during the football segment, my other hate is related to that, actually, which is other sports getting in the way of joining football. It's football season. It's football season. Get your own damn season, okay? It's the fall. And therefore, it's football season. Football season runs from September until February. And in between there, there should be no other sport except for football there can be other sports except for football. That's fine. But they should only be played on Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. And that's it. Not allowed to play on any other days when there's a football game going on. I don't care. I don't want to watch it. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to think about it. I just want to watch football. And leave me alone the rest of the time, okay? So that's what I hate. Other sports get in the way of joining football, because football is king, and it deserves to stay that way, and it will stay that way.
You got to broaden your horizons, my man. You know what? You should be ashamed of yourself. You're a math teacher on top of it.
I am.
What math teacher doesn't love baseball?
I mean, I will say it's fascinating, and it's funny you brought up the whole math teacher thing. I moved to the high school this year, and my dream is to teach a statistics and sports class. And, you know, I mean, a lot of that is based on the money ball. And I mean, you know, I don't want to bore people with a lot of people have seen the movie, but I don't want to bore people with the actual math behind it. But I mean, Bill James basically sat in his garage, literally, and looked at an equation and said, okay, I have runs created on the left side. What stats can I put on the right side to make it equal the left side? And he like literally figured it out. It's like stupid that he was able to do that. But like the math that goes into it is wild. And, you know, analytics is used in all the sports now, but it started in baseball. And so you're right. Like, you know, there's definitely the math element behind it. But at the end of the day, you have to have the guys to do it. Oakland's been on that train, and they've never won a World Series. Have they even appeared in a World Series? Like, I mean, this era of, no. The Moneyball A's, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's,
well,
you know, but anyways.
Well, I think the big thing with analytics and Moneyball too is, Moneyball is, baseball's 162 games. So when you're playing Moneyball, everything works out. When you're playing so many games, the averages always come to fruition. But when you're playing like four, five, six, seven games, it doesn't necessarily going to play out in your favor over that short, small sample size. And I think that's like huge, you know. I obviously with statistics, you would know more than me, but if you're like playing the averages over 162 games, your odds are greater, you know, and your odds are greater over that larger sample size than if you go over the 5, 6, 7 game series. And you just need to know how to manufacture runs. Like if you're going cold for 3 games in the playoffs, forget about it. If you're going cold for 3 games over the course of the season, no big deal. You know, all the numbers play out. But I think that's kind of like one of the big things with some of the money balls. You kind of have to balance it with I hate to say it, but like traditionalists.
You know what it is that it comes down to, and you're right about the, you know, about the sample size and about how over the course of time, things even out because they do. If you're talking about a huge sample of time, things even out because that's just how it works. But at some point in the playoffs, you're going to need one guy to step up and be better than the other guy across from him. And I'm not talking about, you know, we're not saying like better than the guy across from him for, you know, over the course of the season. We're talking about like he needs to step into the batter's box or step onto the mound and be better right there in that moment. And that takes talent. That's not just masking it with other things going on. It's just like this guy needs to step into the batter's box and hit a home run and be better than the pitcher. And if you don't have the talent to do that, you can't win. And that's why they haven't won, because they don't, when it comes down to it, they don't have that high-end elite talent at enough spots, you know, to really win over a small sample size as opposed to a large sample size. And that's what it comes. And again, I don't want to get into the whole statistics of it and everything else and, you know, all this other stuff. But that's basically what it comes down to, is that, yes, over the course of time, you can do it. That's why the model is so interesting, because it's based on a 162-game season, which is fine, but it really should be based on like a 7-game series. That's really what you need to base it on. And, right. You know, and it's not done that way. And I understand why, but like you have to take that into consideration too, you know?
Right, right. And I mean, at the same time, you can just get lucky with your averages too when they're hot during those 7-game series. But like, I know what you said about the talent. Like sometimes you just need a guy who can steal a base. I mean, in 04, everybody in the world knew that David Roberts was going to steal second base, and he still did it. Like, you just need a guy to do something, you know, instead of just waiting for the averages to even out.
Exactly. So, all right. Anyways, somehow this football segment has turned into a baseball segment. But, Chris, thank you for joining me again. I appreciate it. You've somehow hoodwinked me into that's a great word, hoodwinked. He somehow hoodwinked me into more baseball, but I think it was a productive baseball talk. I shoehorned some math in there, which was interesting. So, you know, yeah. Thanks for coming on. We'll have to keep it going, and you're gonna keep trying to get me to talk baseball, I'm sure, and I'm gonna keep fighting it with all my power. But unfortunately, growing up in the Boston area, it's ingrained in me. As much as I'm like football. There's just part of me that's baseball because I have no choice.
Hey, Pat, we're American. Baseball's ingrained in all of us.
Touche, salesman. So, all right, Chris, thank you, man. And until next week.
Hey, thanks, Pat. Love talking baseball with you.
You got it. You got it. See you later.
Bye.
All right, so I want to thank Chris for coming on again. That's a fun little segment that we do. I really enjoy that. So, you know, we're going to keep doing that the whole football season, and then, you know, we'll figure out what happens after that. But certainly for the whole football season, we'll keep doing the love hate. So let's get into the 3-minute drill.
And now for something a little different.
Check, check, check. 3-minute drill. 3-minute drill, said.
Okay, so this week I'm going to be talking about something that I've kind of already talked about before. Not really, but kind of already talked about before. I actually wrote an article about this. This week on Pat's Pulpit, but I was talking about how the Patriots kind of deal with those expiring contracts really well. And, you know, the Earl Thomas thing was interesting this weekend, right? When he breaks his leg and then gives the finger to the Seahawks sideline as he's going out the field. you know, basically like, screw you, I knew this was going to happen, and now I'm not going to get paid. And you feel for the guy, and you feel for the guy because these contracts aren't guaranteed, right? It's the only sport, it's the only professional sport where the contracts aren't guaranteed. And yes, they're making a decent amount of money, they're making a ton of money to play a game. And that's 100% true. And, you know, there's a lot of us that wish we could have that job, obviously. But they're putting their bodies on the line every week, and, you know, they're not getting any guaranteed contracts. And for a guy like Thomas, who is a really, really solid safety and almost bordering on great safety, you understand why he wants to kind of hold out until he gets paid. But at the same time, then he gets fined for not showing up and how much you're going to get paid and everything else like that. And so, you know, the Seahawks situation was kind of interesting there. And you almost wonder, like, why they didn't trade him earlier. That's what I don't get. Like, what are you holding on for? If the guy's holding out and you're not going to pay him, which they obviously weren't, what are you doing? It doesn't make any sense. You know, it's not like you're going to compete for a championship this year. I mean, if you're being honest, the Seahawks aren't good enough to compete for a championship this year. They should have known that, and they should have gotten rid of him when they had the opportunity to. Because now, the thing about him is that, yes, it sucks for him because he loses money. But if you're looking at it from the organization's point of view, it sucks for them because they're losing their asset without getting any compensation back. And so maybe they can, you know, maybe they can franchise tag the guy, but is it worth it? So, and you look at what the Steelers have done with Le'Veon Bell, and Bell's going to come back, it looks like, this year, but the value is not going to be there for them. They still, you know, they say, supposedly still on the trading block. Are they going to sign him? Are they not going to sign him? What are they going to do with him? Right? And like I said, the Raiders took a lot of heat for trading Mac, but I think it may have been the right move for them. If they're not going to sign him, then trade him. And the Patriots have done this over and over again. They did it with Brandon Cooks this year, and Cooks in the expiring contract. They weren't going to re-sign him. They knew they weren't going to re-sign him, and they got a first-round pick for him. And you might look at it and say, well, you know, Isaiah Wynn's hurt, and so the first-round pick was, well, I don't care. They got a first-round pick for the guy. They gave up a first-round pick last year, and they moved up 8 spots in the draft to get another first-round pick for him back. And so I thought that it was a solid trade for them, and people could do revisionist history all they want on it. It was a good trade. Anytime you can give up a guy like that, and let's be honest, you're not paying Brandon Cooks $14 million a year to play wide receiver. You're not doing that. There's no chance it was going to happen. So there's no reason to even think about it, because it definitely wasn't going to happen. There's my timer. So, but I think if you look at recent history, Seymour, right? They get a first-round pick that ends up turning into Nate Solder. You trade Logan Mankins, which ends up being, you know, Tim Wright and a fourth-round pick. By the way, that fourth-round pick, little guy at Trey Flowers. Ever heard of him? And so, you know, you do some of those things. Chandler Jones, you get a second-round pick. You end up moving back in that second-round pick, and you get Malcolm Mitchell and Joe Tooney. And again, Mitchell's not on the team anymore, and Tooney, you can think whatever you want to think about him, but the Patriots don't win that 16 Super Bowl without Malcolm Mitchell. So, you know, it's one of those things. You kind of go back and forth on it. Do they win? Do they not win? You know, when they're getting rid of those guys at the right time, and they're saying, you know, we're ready to move on, right? And so even Jamie Collins, you know, you look at Jamie Collins and you say, did we really get enough for him? And you know, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but they weren't going to pay him long term. He was unhappy, and so they moved on from him. And whether you think it's the right decision or not, I think more often than not, they've come out on top of those decisions. So I think, you know, you have to kind of give them the benefit of the doubt. So anyways, that's my spiel. I know I went over 3 minutes, but that's okay. Let's get into This Week in Sports History.
And now for something we think you'll really like. This Week in Sports History.
All right, so I'm going to go in chronological order, as always. The first one is October 3rd, 1920. That is when the Dayton Triangles beat the Columbus Panhandles 14-0 in the first official game of the American Pro Football Association, which, of course, later became the NFL. So first, you know, quote-unquote NFL game was played October 3rd, 1920, between the Dayton Triangles. I will repeat that again. The Dayton Triangles, fierce. There were fierce looking triangles. They must have been like isosceles triangles, you know, real buff triangles. And I don't know. That was a horrible math joke. I didn't really think it through. I just went with it. It didn't. It wasn't good. So I apologize. And they beat the Columbus Panhandles. Okay, whatever. It's 1920, so different times back then. So that was October 3rd, 1920. October 5th, 1960, the Celtics draw names out of a hat from the defunct Chicago Stags franchise and end up with Bob Cousy. Worked out pretty good for them. Here's what's interesting about the story about Cousy and how he ended up on the Celtics is a crazy one. He went to Holy Cross, which is in Worcester. Interesting. Red had the number one pick that year. Only time the Celtics had drafted number one, by the way. It's the only time the Celtics had drafted number one. He had the number one pick that year. Everyone around here wanted him to take Cousy because he's a local guy, and they're like, oh, you know, this would be perfect, blah, 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 whatever. Red passed on him and drafted center by the name of Chuck Scheer. The only number one pick in Celtics history, and the guy's name was Chuck Scheer, never played a minute for the Boston Celtics. Never. Instead, he signed with a rival league, the NPBL, and came back to the NBA the next season, but in Detroit. He ended up being like an okay player, kind of a role player, won the championship, I think, in 68, I think he won. Anyways, doesn't matter. He was kind of a role player for a few years. He was fine, but, I mean, Cousy was legit. So Cousy gets passed by the Celtics, gets drafted by the Tri-City Blackhawks. However, Cousy, this story is so ridiculous, it's crazy. You can't even make it up. He gets drafted by the Tri-City Blackhawks, but he wanted to start a driving school in Worcester. That's what he wanted to do. Well, he couldn't do that because he was going to be playing for the Tri-City Blackhawks. He's like, screw this. So I want you to pay me a salary of $10,000. And the Blackhawks are like, no, you can go pound sand, buddy. We're not doing that. So he held out, and they eventually just said, fine, forget it. See you later. So he basically becomes a free agent again. He gets picked up by the Stags. They fold before the season starts, and then there were three players available. Celtics are picking out of a hat. There were three players available. One of them's Cousy, and the owner at the time was Walter Brown. And he said the two other guys that were in the hat, he'd be happy with both of them. One of them he liked more. One of them he was like kind of fine about. The third one was Cousy, and he was going to be pissed if he got Cousy. And, of course, he ends up with Cousy. And it's just like, you've got to be kidding me, okay? And Cousy, you know, revolutionized the game and, you know, played, was the first guy to ever dribble through his legs in a basketball game. You know, just all these crazy things that Cousy did. And obviously, you know, was basically Mr. Basketball around here. You know, really kind of an interesting situation, but the Celtics didn't want him at first. And so it was it's a pretty fascinating story with Bob Cousy. So I always love doing this week in sports history because I learn all these ridiculous things about how, you know, Cousy wasn't drafted by the Celtics and, you know, it never played a game for another team, but it wasn't drafted by the Celtics. So it's just kind of a fascinating situation. And then my final one is, well, it's kind of like two, October 3rd, 1995, and October 3rd, 2008. O.J. Simpson, man. October 3rd, it's got to be the day for him. October 3rd, 1995, O.J. is found not guilty of murder. And October 3rd, 2008, O.J. Simpson's found guilty of kidnapping and armed robbery. The same exact day. The verdict came down on exactly the same day 13 years later. How weird is that? But anyways, that's the O.J. thing there. Well, I'm not going to get into the O.J. conversation. That's a long conversation. I'm not going to get into it. I'm just stating the fact that I think it's interesting. The verdict came down both on October 3rd. Again, one positive for him, one negative for him. But, you know, I think we all kind of know he did it, but that's beside the point. So, anyways, that's all I got for the show this week. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Thanks, Mike, for stepping in and coming on. It was a lot of fun. I'd love to do that again with him. And thanks again for Chris coming on for the love-hate section. Again, another fun segment. Always enjoy doing that. Thanks to Marcus and the Boxes podcast for the intro song and also the cuts in there. He does a great job. Listen to him and Wesley review a different movie every Monday. And again, spoiler-free review. So definitely check them out. And check out the Triforce as well. It is the hashtag Dorktober3 Season of the Witch. And so, you know, Mac and Goo and Hashtag Dork are doing all kind of spooky, Halloween-ish horror stuff the entire month of October. So it's really a fun listen, and, you know, all month it'll be a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully you'll be listening to them as well. Also want to thank MDOT and Core for the outro song. MDOT is at MDOT Boston. Again, check him on our Instagram, on Twitter. He's got new music coming out kind of left and right. And, you know, you check him out on iTunes. And then Core is at K-O-R-E of E-M-S. And again, you know, Corey's kind of doing the same thing. He's got some features on the MDOT stuff, and so, you know, check him out for sure. As for my show, at Weekend War Pod is on Twitter, so it's no E's, WKNDWARPOD. And then my my personal account is at WTP Lane, if you want to follow me there as well. And if you haven't already, we'd love for you to, you know, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Really appreciate it. Definitely helps the views. And again, you know, iTunes has that weird algorithm. I'm sure all the podcasts you listen to kind of say the same thing, but, you know, iTunes has that weird algorithm where it's like the more people review it and the more, you know, the more recently people review it, kind of, you know, the higher it goes up there. So, you know, if you could review that, I'd really appreciate it. And, you know, we'll kind of see where it goes from there. But again, thanks for joining me, and have a great day.
Simmons, no timeouts. You got to go. Williams, three. Yes!
You don't need to tune in. This is a show, bro. Put the game upside down like a strobe globe. Weekend Warriors, it's a podcast. What you call a commentary, can I call trash?
Warriors, come out to play.
Weekend Warriors, it's a podcast. What you call a commentary, can I call trash?
Hey, yo.
WCP. Warriors, especially on the weekend, looking for that sports talk, this is where it be, man. Breakdowns on your favorite teams and all that, hear about the starters long before the ball snap. You can call Pat or go ahead and call Mike, cause we here all night, no time to stall, right? 2 seconds left, clutch shot, it's go time. Knuckles on the O-line, watch the losers go wine.
Turn me up on that radio dial. It's been a while since I played, but I'm here with a smile. I'm taking jump shots, get a minute, I'm out. I'm breaking records like Bill Russell, kid has got muscle. Being polite when I'm patting this mic. You see the city of champs coming to victory dance, buddy. It's radio talk, so turn it up when it's on. We're gonna listen and rock to what it is that you want. Warriors,
y'all need to tune in. This is a show, bro.